I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In this week, prior to the presidential election, our special series, The People's Choice, has been examining how voters see the major issues in this campaign. Today, we turn to one of the most emotional and most compelling, that of security.
I'm concerned about security, yes.
I just feel like we're sitting ducks. No one knows when, but we're vulnerable.
I mean, I don't feel threatened. I think that it was a fluke what happened, and I don't think that could happen again.
Well, I feel that Bush, since he already started, he should be the one to finish it, because a lot of people feel safe with him.
I feel quite a bit less safe today because I feel like the actions of the current administration have polarized the world.
Terrorism's terrorism. You know, it can strike anywhere now. And ever since 9/11, I think everyone realizes that.
We were lied to. So I'll be voting for the person who didn't lie to us.
I think we need to keep this country secure and no flaws, nothing. We'll keep our country safe.
So who is best equipped and who is most likely to keep America safe? Will the man chosen to be the 44th president actually be able to make a difference? We'd like to hear from you and hear how vital an issue you believe this is in this election. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have two guests with us on the program today. Bernice Wiffler is from Plymouth, Massachusetts. Her two sons have been fighting in Iraq, and they are now back home. She's here to talk about how she sees their service in context of larger questions about American security and the country's political future. It's nice to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Must be so happy to have your boys home.
Absolutely.
And joining us from the NPR studios in New York is Marian Fontana. Her husband, David, was among the firefighters killed at the World Trade Center. She is head of the 9/11 Widows and Victims Families Association. And Marian, I want to thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me.
You know, in so many ways, and I guess in so many arguments, this all goes back to that morning, September 11th, 2001. I wonder, Marian, if you can start us there. You were supposed to meet your husband, Dave, at a coffee shop, and he didn't show up. Have I got that right?
Yes, that's right. It was our 8th wedding anniversary, and he had switched shifts so he could have off for the day. And we were to meet at a coffee shop in my neighborhood. I called him in the morning. He was finished with a 24-hour shift, and he said he'd meet me in 10 minutes. And I went to meet him after I dropped my son off at school and waited and saw a large plume of smoke coming over Brooklyn, where we live. And,
You had a conversation with Dave after an earlier fire that year in New York. We refer to it now as the Father's Day fire, where he was there. And while there were firefighters who lost their lives there, he was not among them. But you said to him at that time, you call me.
Right. That day felt very much like September 11th in that I didn't know what was happening. I saw a news report that firefighters had been killed at a fire in Queens, and I hadn't heard from Dave, which was unlike him, and I started to panic, and I tried to get information. I couldn't get any information, and waited until he finally called, and I was crying. He was crying. He said it was the worst day of his life and that if he wouldn't do that to me again, he would call.
So when he didn't call on September 11th, you already knew, suspected the worst.
I suspected the worst. I mean, he's a firefighter, and like all firefighters, they want to go to a good job, as they call it. But when I got home, I had pictured a little Cessna, had struck the building. I had no idea what was really going on. And when I turned on the TV, I immediately knew that this was serious and that Dave was there. And then, of course, when I saw the tower fall, I immediately knew that he was gone.
Did you ever find out, Marian, what happened to Dave on that day?
What's interesting is I talk to a lot of firefighters all the time, and I get new information all the time. I recently found out that Dave had run through the tunnel, the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, which connects Brooklyn to Manhattan, on foot. And I had always pictured him in his fire truck, and apparently there was a lot of traffic, and they wanted to get there, so they all jumped off. And so I find out new things all the time.
Everyone in his firehouse died in that fire.
That's right.
Was Dave's body ever found?
Yes. Ironically, I was one of the lucky ones. In December 6th, he was found, and he was one of four found out of the 12 killed. And, of course, less than half of the firefighters have been recovered It's been a very painful thing for a lot of families.
And it's been 3 years now. Can you look back on that period of time and describe it for us? I mean, how has it been?
Well, it's been a whirlwind. You know, my world really just stopped spinning a little bit. You know, I was thrust into a kind of public spotlight when they tried to close my husband's firehouse about 2 weeks after he was killed. So from then on, things, a lot of issues came up, a lot of political issues that I needed to address. And so I kind of became thrust into this very public spotlight that I never planned on, you know, encompassing, you know, or being a part of. So it was very crazy, thousands of phone calls a day, a wonderful outpouring of love from the whole country that was really overwhelming. And then, of course, you know, the immediacy of trying to find out information of things at the site not being handled well at Ground Zero and having to, you know, go to meetings and meet with politicians and try to get things done right.
And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you're in charge of the 9/11 Widows and Victims Families Association. Is this ever going to end?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think so. I mean, 9/11 really had a huge impact on not just my life, but everybody's life across the country. So I think we need to keep it in our minds as an important and significant event in history that really can inform our future. So, no, I don't see it happening. And in terms of my own personal moving on, yes, I need to. I've moved on from my sadness a bit, and I'm trying to, you know, put my life back together. But in a more global way, I think 9/11 really needs to be a significant part of everyone's consciousness.
Your son Aiden was 5 on that day. He's 8 now and in grade 3. How's he doing?
He's doing well. I think kids are a lot more resilient than we are, and he has a lot more questions now that he's older and understands what happened a little bit more. A lot of political questions about the war, and a lot of the firefighters from my husband's firehouse are over in Iraq, and things like that have spurred a lot of interest in him in terms of how this affected 9/11 and what it has to do with it. And so it's challenging as a mom to answer all the questions and really try to provide him with the information he needs.
Well, it's great to have you here. I'm going to ask you to just sit with us for a moment while sure. We meet Bernice Wiffler. And the last thing that Marion said about the resilience of children, I guess, is probably the best way to start with your story, Bernice. Your 2 sons just back from Iraq, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Mark, 25, Eric, 28. Not boys anymore.
No.
These are young men. You just must be pinching yourself knowing that they're home.
I thought that peace would be restored to our home and with all the noise and the excitement, but I'm still unable to sleep. It's still a reality. It's hard to imagine or to accept that they're home. They're not the same men that left. And I just want to experience all the good things that they deserve. I want to provide them with peace of mind and...
In what way are they not the same men that left? Are they talking to you about what they saw over there? How far are you along in that?
Bits and pieces. I don't want to ask questions of them because I know we've been advised, and I'm at an age where I've had an experience through the Vietnam War, and I had an idea or an inkling how this was going to affect when they left. After 9/11, I received a letter from Eric, in which he really wanted to go. He felt that the impact on our country made such a big difference to him. But I felt that to see death close at hand, to be affected by what they had to experience, I don't think they had any idea of it.
Were they injured while they were there?
Yes. Eric had surgery in Germany and then went back to Iraq. And he's home now. There'll be further surgery, they think, of this hearing, which could restore some. I think that they are overwhelmed with the reality of the the horror of war. I really do think this has affected their demeanor. I see that, but I see they're coming back. You know, we're very happy that they're coming home. Their older brother is getting married in 2 weeks, and we're just looking forward to experiencing the joy.
Did you, in the time that they were in Iraq, find yourself in arguments with friends or neighbors about what they were doing there?
I was never like that before. I never took a stand, or I didn't feel that it would. But I found myself amazed with people that, I think, for a loss of words, or they're not experienced with the fact of what, how to sympathize or empathize, that they parrot words they've heard before and say the wrong thing. And I
give me an example of a sort of encounter
we shouldn't be over there. We should bomb the place, get our boys out of there, and just bomb the place, wipe them all out. And I've heard that so many times, and I was remarking, as a matter of fact, I heard it coming out of church. And I felt as though something snapped inside. I just said, no, this has got to stop. This is not how we react to what our idealistic youth are going through right now. And when I say youth, it's because I'm so much older, but I think like 1 in 6,000 were affected by having a loved one going off to war, Afghanistan, Iraq. When it really happens to you, and then a close friend, her son came home and was buried 2 weeks before his 21st birthday, that reality doesn't make me want to say, we shouldn't be there, we should get them out of there and bomb the place. That's not the way I was raised, and I can't bring myself to let people say things like that anymore.
So it's that criticism of what's it for? It's the criticism of why your boys are there, why the country is there. You can't take that apart and say, well, this is good and that is bad.
No, I felt as though someone had said to me that they thought they were being taken advantage of because they were so idealistic. And I said, these are not boys. These are men who made this conscious decision to do what they felt they had to do, what they wanted to do. They were trained as Marines. Mark was completely finished with his 6 years as a Marine. And when his older brother, Eric, the reserve unit, was called up, Eric had to miss his graduation from college to go to Iraq. So Mark, who wants to be a firefighter, was on the list, ready to go, signed up again. So the two of them went off within 2 days of each other, and they came home within 2 days of each other. They were mature men who made a decision consciously to fight for their country.
I'm going to stop you there. Remind our listeners that our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This is the final in our series as we're taking a look at the issues and the most sort of poignant aspects of this election campaign. Security has become one of the primary focuses of both presidential campaigns, but it's ultimately a very personal story, and that's how we're approaching it this hour on The Connection. We'd like to have you join us. We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. This hour, my two guests are Marion Fontana. Her husband, David, was a firefighter who died in the World Trade Center on September 11th with the Union Street Firehouse in Park Slope, Brooklyn. They lost 12 firefighters from that one firehouse on that day. Bernice Wiffler is here with me in Boston. Her two sons, Mark and Eric, recently returned from Iraq where they were serving as Marine sergeants. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about security and connecting the personal sense of this country's security with what we're hearing on the election campaign. So we're going to take our first call this hour from Fayetteville, North Carolina, and Fran is on the phone. Hi, Fran.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to these ladies and hearing how personal this has all been for them. And what I'd like to know is, because it's so close to their hearts, because they know the personal tragedies that have come out of 9/11, I would like to know, without getting too partisan, what they feel the next president, whoever that may be, should do. You know, we've got new policies now, our preemptive, you know, the preemptive policy. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not saying that right, but also all these terror alerts that we're under. What do they think about that, and what kind of response do they feel that the country should be making?
Fran, I like your first question. It's right to the point. What should the next president do? And Marion Fontana, I wonder if you can start on that.
Sure. Well, I think it's imperative that we think more globally on addressing terrorism. I think it's really important to do what we had set out to do in the beginning, which is work with other countries. Because terrorism is such a covert and difficult thing to address, I think it's really important that we address it not just a nation, but as a world, to make our borders safer and to work with other countries in doing that.
This sounds like the sort of thing that John Kerry is promising to do if he's elected. Are you supporting him for the presidency?
I thought we weren't supposed to be partisan, but yes.
No rules here. We're talking a little bit of politics at the same
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is that in your mind, Marion, a gesture in support of what Senator Kerry's been saying, or is there also in that some frustration with what you've seen from the current president?
I've been very frustrated. I think it's, you know, I felt like the outpouring of support was this unique time in history where the whole world really came together to support us, and that really comforted me in my loss, and I felt like that was turned into something entirely different by our current administration, and that was very upsetting to me. I feel like they used the death of my husband to go into a country we didn't belong in the first place, and that we really shifted the spotlight from Afghanistan, which is where the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are, to this country that we are really there for oil interests. So I was very upset by how everything was handled. And then in terms of 9/11, trying to get information about what really happened that day mm-hmm. was also very difficult, and I think the administration was really abysmal in giving the families the information they so desperately needed about what happened to their loved ones that day.
Bernice, what are you looking for in the man who will be elected president next week?
Honesty, trust. I have a very difficult time with putting those words together with a politician.
Well said, Bernice.
I'm worried. I'm amazed as a New Englander. I lived in Boston all my life. I'm amazed at the support that keeps on going out for Kerry. I just can't believe the whole country knows. We got back from California, and I said to my daughter, oh, look at this, a Kerry sign. She said, Mom, this is national. It isn't just Massachusetts. It's just so ironic for me to... I think we're in a point now that people just don't know. They don't really like either one that much. I don't know what to expect from both, but I've seen a pattern with each man, and it's almost like the lesser of two evil.
Bush is the lesser of two evil.
Yes,
I actually pick
way.
Up something that you
I
said a little bit earlier in the program, Bernice, because you made the point that you are a woman of the Vietnam generation. You had two brothers serving in Vietnam, am I right?
No, actually, they were my best friends. Oh. My girlfriend's married.
Oh, okay.
And we dated my senior prom, and this is all through my high school and growing up, getting married.
So having been
Vietnam
through, that war that was so controversial. I mean, do you remember 1971? Do you remember when John Kerry sat in front of the congressional committee?
Yes, I do. And I was ashamed, and I was angry because I felt as though I get even angrier because I listen to the way that he will bring up his war record mm-hmm. after throwing his medals away. And that's slapping his country.
Is he doing it again
campaign? Every time if he brings up his war record, he's to me, that's just two-faced. I remember when he ran for the office in Lowell. He didn't live in Lowell. I don't even know if he ever passed through the town. What was he going to do for the people of Lowell? He didn't win. But I believe that this man has set his goals. Oh, I can't believe I'm so vitriolic. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
I don't...
Marion, do you want to jump in here? When you listen to this question of who do you trust, how do you square that?
Well, it's difficult. I think Bernice is raising some interesting issues. I really can only base it on what I read about our current administration and my disappointment in how they've handled things. I think it's been abysmal. I mean, their record in terms of honesty, and that it was what Bernice was talking about, has really been archaic in terms of being upfront with the American people. You know, just today, the Halliburton investigations, the constant, they're hiding things and they're not being honest with the American people. And we've really made an effort to try to find out what's really going on. And in terms of Iraq, it's painful. And I support the troops. I really feel for Bernice, and I have a lot of firefighter friends over there now. And I think it's really a shame that, that we're over there fighting a war for oil. And I think we need to really reassess what we're doing over there and really think about our young men that are dying over there, over 1,000, almost, over 8,000 maimed. I think it's really time that we put a new president in there to try to make some changes and get us out of there.
Bernice?
Well, I do have two brothers that are Kerry supporters, so this was very difficult. But I don't believe that we can differentiate and go quite honestly and say that it was for oil. When I heard about the prisoners of war from the concentration camps, we had no interest to go into a war in Germany, but it was a good thing that we did. And I don't see this much different with Saddam Hussein. I believe this evil is out of there, and I'm proud of the fact that he's out of there. I don't believe it's just for oil. Mm. We could have gone to Venezuela.
Well,
no
one can doubt. Yeah, no, I agree. I think Hussein, needed to be removed. But in terms of concentrating our energies and shifting the spotlight to that while leaving Iran and North Korea open, I think it's threatened our safety. And if we come back to safety for our country, I think it's clear that we've really dropped the ball on that. Afghanistan's, the Taliban are regrouping in eastern and southern regions of Afghanistan. Opium production has, doubled. There's a lot of scary things going on in there, and we're concentrating all our efforts in a country we really don't belong in right
Marion,
now.
Let's go back to our callers. We've got someone on the line now from Williamsburg, Virginia. It's Al, and Al's joining us now. Hi, Al.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I wanted to thank Bernice for her son's service. I'm a former naval officer. I've been out of active duty for 10 years. But 2 weeks ago, I was with some friends who are currently serving on active duty, and they're now senior officers. They're at the commander and captain rank within the Navy. And they had some complaints. They had some concerns, and it fit in line with some other things that I'm hearing, basically that our military is concerned that they're being that the White House and that the neoconservatives specifically are moving the war in a way that goes out of their doctrine. There was the Powell Doctrine. There was a way to do this, and the United States had prosecuted a number of engagements relatively successful following that doctrine. It was not as well done in Somalia, and there again, some politics had leaked in there. These are professional military people. They know how to war. That's what they do. I think a lot of what we're dealing with in Iraq right now is there's too much politics in it. Let the warriors do what the warriors need to do.
Well, the truth is, though, that President Bush has ignored a lot of his military advisors from the beginning, and that's really one of the reasons why we are in the situation we are now. You see them coming out every day with, disgruntled, military leaders feeling like he really did not heed their advice in the area that they had expertise in. So I think that's really why we're in the situation we're in. It's not the troops' fault. It's really our administration's fault.
And Bernice, I don't know what you do with all the different opinions Al talks about. you know, people who are in or have been in the military who are raising questions mm-hmm. about this. And I mean, it comes at you from all different quarters, doesn't it?
It does. It seems as though I hear a great deal of men won't want to go back, or they don't. But I know for a fact that Mark's entire unit had been there before, and they all signed up again. That's 90 men that went back. I understand this thought we shouldn't be there. We should be looking for the 9/11 terrorists. Well, a terrorist doesn't really have one country. And I know that Jordan and Syria are bringing aid to the terrorists. We have a war against terrorists. It's not just an oil war. I don't see how we benefited from it. I think that this is not just a war in Iraq, and it's only the beginning. That's my guess. I'm not really educated about it, but I feel that we've jumped in, and we're starting something. I don't think we're waiting for this war to end. It's not going to just go away and have them come home and be ended.
Okay. Al, did you want to jump in here, Alan Williamsburg?
Well, I think there's two things to with regard to Iraq and our presence there and why we're there. In some respects, I have to agree with the people who say, you know, fight it there rather than anywhere else. I don't think it was simply oil. I think, too, though, when you talk about people going back, they don't go back because they agree or disagree with the president. They go back because they have friends there who they know, if they weren't there helping them, that those people's lives would be at risk.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bond and there's a brotherhood. And it's the same thing like a fireman. You know, you have to scratch your head. Why does a fireman run into a burning house? It's not because he thinks it's going to be safe in there, because that's what he has to do. It's very much the same thing. That's why it takes the public, and that's why it takes people in the know to say, okay, let's steer this away. Because, again, they're warriors, and warriors war. But they are warriors for the United States who listen to civilian leadership. And it's up to us, the people, the civilians, mm-hmm. to direct that policy. Now,
let me just stop you, if I can, for a minute, Alan, turn to Marion Fontana here. I'm just wondering whether or not there is this kind of clean parallel that exists between the work of the firefighter who goes into the burning building and the work of the Marine sergeant who goes into a war zone like Iraq.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a tremendous connection, and considering that it's a huge population of firefighters are in the reserves and are over there now. I think, you know, you cannot underestimate the bravery of these men. And that's why it's imperative for an administration to really guide them in the proper way. I think, you know, a lot of my husband's friends went over there thinking they were going to go get, you know, the terrorists that killed Dave. And unfortunately, they were not in Iraq. They were in Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia. So I think it's unfortunate that these wonderful men went over there with such wonderful intentions and then, you know.
But Marion, if we were to do a survey of firefighters in New York and friends and mm-hmm. family of firefighters in New York, I would bet, I mean, you know this way better than I do, but I would.
A huge minority.
Yeah, that more of them would share Bernice's point of view.
Absolutely.
Here. And I'm
Absolutely.
Wondering if that's a difficult argument for you to carry with, I mean, you will be in conversation with other widows having this argument.
Absolutely. I've had a lot of, but you know, that's what our country's about. It's about people like Bernice and I being able to sit down and discuss this. I mean, as long as you're, you know, educated in your decision to vote, that's what, you know, her son's fighting for and what my husband died for is that freedom. I think that, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of information that they don't have, like the fact that Bush received a report from the EPA saying it wasn't safe for rescue workers to work at Ground Zero after 9/11, and President Bush ignored it. And now I'm going to benefits and all these things where these firefighters are dying of cancer and lung ailments, and I'm seeing them get sick, and I'm going to more funerals, and it's really disturbing that these same men are turning around and going to fight in other countries and are going to vote for this president again, not knowing the things that this administration has done to affect them, and that's disturbing.
We're going to Apex, North Carolina, for our next call. Carolyn's on the line. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am a recently retired military officer. I served for 22 years in the Air Force, and I was in a career field that had me in the Middle East quite a bit. And but first, I just want to thank Marion and Bernice for the service of Bernice's sons and Marion's husband. And also, I just wanted to point this out, regardless of who ends up becoming the next president, I think that it would be really wonderful for the civilian public to know that in the late 80s, when we went through this massive downsizing of the military, in some respects, in certain career fields, we were cut very thin. Now we're having to, you know, rely on our reservists and our Guards people to come and support us. But honestly, I feel that with the positions of where we are in Iraq, and also as Marion was mentioning, we still have things happening in Afghanistan. We still have things happening in North Korea, Korea, and other places where we are. But the bottom line is we still need to have more people on active duty because we cannot keep relying on our reserve and Guards people.
And Carolyn, which of the two candidates, in your judgment, is most likely to do that?
I personally feel that Kerry would be more for doing that. And the reason I say this, I was listening to what Bernice was saying, but I have had the opportunity to have forums with Secretary Rumsfeld, and I was very disappointed because when we talked about the fact that we needed more equipment, we needed more things to get done so we could support our pilots better, it just didn't seem to be that big of a deal. That was just my opinion.
No, Carolyn, I thank you for your opinion and for your service and your call on this program. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to let Carolyn answer the door so the dog stops barking when we come back. The dog's supporting Bush. That's why the dog's barking. When we come back after the break, a chance to continue the conversation with Bernice Wiffler and Marion Fontana, two people whose families are lives have become sort of inextricably enmeshed in the whole question of security that captivates this country in the final days of the election campaign. Chance for you to join us. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. It's pretty simple. Which candidate is going to make America safer? And does either one of them have a plan to win the war on terror and end the war in Iraq? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. With me in the studio here in Boston, Bernice Wiffler, her two sons, Mark and Eric, just back from Iraq, where they were serving a number of months as Marine sergeants. Marion Fontana is joining us from the NPR studios in New York City. Her husband, David, was a firefighter who died in the World Trade Center on September 11th. And our conversation this hour actually begins with September 11th and takes us up to Tuesday, November the 2nd, because we have all seen an election campaign that has become almost consumed by the debate and the arguments over who would provide better security for the country and, in fact, whether or not that's the argument we ought to be having or whether or not we should be discussing jobs and health care and all the other issues that are a part of an election campaign. The number for you to join us is 1-800-423-8255. I want to start, if I can, here in the Boston studio with Bernice and just a couple of words from you, Bernice, about whether or not you feel that this essential argument over what is this country supposed to be here at home and abroad. Do you feel that the candidates and the rest of us are getting to the nub of that, or do you fear at times that it's just become a kind of trading of political slogans without really examining the heart of the issue?
I really haven't heard anything but bitterness and anger and resentment. It just seems like it's just dirty. I'd love to be able to have a campaign where they could accentuate the positive. I don't care for our image throughout the world. I grew up as being proud to be an American. I traveled. I can remember taking, when Eric was in junior high school, we went to Switzerland on a Team USA hockey event. He was invited to Russia and Germany. And all of the boys in the team had a big USA jacket. And when we got to the airport, we were told they should take it off. There was an American soldier, young sailor, who was on a flight coming out of the Middle East, and he was murdered because he was an American. Mm-hmm. When our plane arrived in Switzerland, I was surprised to see a tank behind barbed wire in the airport on the tarmac. We got in, we unloaded the boys' hockey equipment. It was all in the middle of the area, people all around us, and there were soldiers with their guns trained at us.
This is long, long before
this
September 11th.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was so different to me because this wonderful adventure for me and my family, going off to Europe, representing the USA, but being afraid, seeing armed guards, I never saw anything like that in my life. We came home, and then there were many more hijackings and killings, and how my children are being raised now is different. But our security hadn't changed that I could see. I mean, I think it was harder to get into Canada than it was to buy a flight. I don't know why it took so long, and it's unfortunate that 9/11 brought this to us, but in this span of 2 years, how remarkably we have tried to correct something that should have happened. We should have protected ourselves better. We should have been more aware. Perhaps this wonderful, no one's ever come on our soil to hurt us. I don't know if this American image has been tarnished or whether we as a people can bring it back to the way it should be. But I really admire the fact that in this span of time, remarkable things have been done, and it's going to get better. I don't think it's going to get worse.
Marion.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, as you're listening to Bernice talk about her sense of the way the image of this country has changed abroad, how you're hearing that.
Yeah, I think it's very sad. I really think, again, I'll hearken back to post 9/11, which was, I think, a very unique time in history where the world really came together through this huge event. And I think we have the possibility of that. You know, I saw it happen. I saw support from all over the world. And that really enlightened me to what could happen in our world. And then I really feel like it was squandered, and that's unfortunate. But it really showed me a glimpse of the possibilities I have the same positive attitude as Bernice and hopeful attitude. I don't feel any safer now than I did before, in fact, probably less so. But, I am hopeful that, working with other countries and through a collective effort, we could really make a difference.
Going back to our phone lines now to Providence, Rhode Island. Mike's on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Good. I guess there's a few things, obviously. There's a lot of emotions that take place during a war. And I have a brother and I have two best friends over in Iraq right now. One of them is a military police commander. And he was back for a couple months over the summer. And just over dinner, his frustrations were it's a different war. He sees it differently from all the news and the newspapers. He says, and this is what I hear from most of the soldiers over there, that it's overwhelmingly positive what's taking place over there. The people are happy that we're there. They're grateful that we're there. They're grateful that we've restored their schools, that the women can vote, that people aren't being killed for their freedom of speech.
And so is it the media that is getting that story horribly wrong? Is the politics of the campaign twisting that out of shape? Mike, what's your sense of that?
Well, I think that, well, obviously, there's a band called Modest Mouse, and they have a song called something like Good News, the Good News, Bad News is the Best News, and it's like, I think that's the mentality. As long as there's bad news, we'll just report that. But it's overwhelmingly positive what's taking place over there. For the first time in ever, they have running water, they have sewer systems, they have books, they have computers in their schools. Children can go to school and not be killed. And although there is...
Mike, can I ask you to just hold on for half a second? Because we actually have another caller who's joining us, also from where you are in Providence, Rhode Island.
Wow.
And it's Josh on the line. Hi, Josh.
Hey.
What are you thinking as you listen to Mike here? Are you agreeing with him?
Yeah, somewhat. I think the media plays a big role in it. I think there's a lot of fear-mongering going on, kind of. I think they
on both sides, on one side, the other side, where?
I think that the media is kind of making us feel. I think terrorism. What we have to question is that is whether terrorism is more a problem now, or if it's just getting more attention after a major successful attack. You know, I think it might be the latter as opposed to the former. I think
that it's no worse than it ever was, except that we're talking about it more.
Yeah, I mean, there was one successful attack, and I mean, if you listen to the radio, like if you listen to the news before the attacks, I mean,
right.
Look at Oklahoma City and things like that.
Okay, hang on a second here, because it's time to go. We should go to Marion here, and I mean, when people talk about September 11th here, Marion, we hear two different perspectives. We often hear the fact that there hasn't been another is good news, and other people will say the fact that it happened at all is bad news. And I don't know how you see that.
Well, I guess I come from the perspective that it could have been prevented. I really think there were a number of things that happened in the government that could have prevented it. We learned at the 90, my husband was at the 93 bombing, and, you know, we really had a huge opportunity to really address a lot of the issues of Al-Qaeda and Taliban in this country, and we didn't. So I think, you know, if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that we haven't been attacked yet is just dumb luck.
Right. Let me, if I can, go back to Josh in Providence. Mm-hmm. Who are you going to vote for, Josh?
Kerry.
And why?
I think that Bush has done a bad job. I think he's misled the American people a lot. I think he's attacking the wrong targets, Iraq.
I'm going to stop you there, Josh, because I want to keep moving ahead, but I do want to go back to Mike, who's also in Providence. Who are you voting for, Mike?
There's no choice but to vote for Bush. One week, Kerry is going to kill all terrorists and take their spleens out and step on them and smush them to the ground. And the next week, when he's speaking to a college group, he's going to withdraw troops. And then the next week, he's going to add 50,000 more troops, and he's going
to
get...
I got your point, Mike. I want to come back to Bernice in the studio here. This sounds like what's happening on the church lawn in Massachusetts. Is this debate, is this argument, these differing points of view, are they going to be reconciled on November the 2nd, or is it going to be made worse? Because whatever happens on that day, you got two young soldiers mm-hmm. in your family who may or may not go back to Iraq, but are going to raise their own families mm-hmm. based on the knowledge of where we are right now. And
we're resilient. We'll go on. I only hope that we'll learn from our mistakes. That's a wonderful, you know, just, it isn't a mistake if you do something about it.
Absolutely.
So I could say to you, maybe a month ago I was much more emotional, thinking, oh, what'll I do if Kerry wins? I really didn't like that idea. But life will go on. I just want to make things better. And if it starts with me, that's fine. And it's already moved on to my kids and their friends. And the listeners, Marion's touched me. We're going to move on for it, whatever happens.
Would you dare to speak for either Mark or Eric on
no.
this program?
No.
Smart, Bernice.
No. Not at all.
I agree with Bernice. I think that, you know, it really comes from home. I mean, the fact that, you know, I can dialogue with the other widows who feel differently than me, but, you know, we share a profound loss and a changed world. And so, you know, I think it's important to have these kind of dialogues so people can learn and really have a, you know, that's what makes this country great, is you can have this kind of differing opinion and coexist.
When you vote on Tuesday, Marion, are you voting with David in mind, with you in mind, with your son Aiden in mind? What does that vote mean on Tuesday?
Well, you know, ironically, my husband and I never agreed politically, but we had a 17-year relationship, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. There needs to be tolerance and dialogue. You know, he was an independent. He hated partisan politics. Mm-hmm. He just wanted the guy to do the right thing. That's kind of how he viewed it. And I agree. I mean,
So he might disagree with your vote, but he wouldn't disagree with your right to choose who you're voting for.
Right.
Is that reasonable?
Exactly. Yep.
In 34 years of marriage, I don't think my husband and I have agreed in one vote.
See?
But this might be the one.
Well, I mean, that's, again, that's what makes the country great. I mean, I think, you know, I feel for my, you know, for my son's future that I need to vote for Kerry. I think it's a scary idea that to have four more years of what we've had. I don't know where the world will be if we have that. And so I'm scared. I'm staying up at night. I'm reading a lot. I think it's disturbing that, you know, the current fiscal year, the cost of the war will be $200 billion. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that addresses all the other domestic issues. It kind of brings that all into play, too. So, you know, I'm worried for Bernice's sons. I'm worried for everyone. And I really hope that people make the right choice.
I want to just sort of bring a little bit of a dark cloud over this, though, because I do wonder, Bernice, if there's that kind of insensitivity among people who, you know, would say to you while your boys are in Iraq, it's the wrong thing, mm-hmm. not necessarily aware of the fact how you're hearing it. They think it's a political conversation. For you, it's a personal conversation. Mm-hmm. If there's been the sort of damage done so far, that will, in fact, be a little bit difficult to undo.
In my most emotional times that I was so frightened that my kids weren't coming back, we had the remarkable telephone calls. I mean, here they are so many thousands of miles away, 8 hours behind, 4 o'clock in the morning, I loved the phone to ring. And Mark told me that what he was doing was important, and he's done many things he's proud of. That's what has guided me through. That gave me a belief. If I didn't believe in that, if I thought it was a lost cause, I don't know how I would be able to cope. I couldn't cope with the loss of a loved one. I don't know how people are able to do it.
Well, you have both been very generous with your time and your thoughts on this, in particular because of your own very personal involvement. And Bernice, I want to thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you. And thank you, Marion. What a pleasure to listen to you.
Same here, Bernice. Really nice to meet you.
Thanks so much, Marion.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Marion Fontana, her husband is a firefighter. His name is David, and he died on September 11th at the World Trade Center Tower. She's the founder of the 9/11 Widows and Victims Families Association. Bernice Wiffler has two sons just back from Iraq, Eric and Mark, Marine sergeants, who spent 9 months serving in that country. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.